I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday in Paris, more than a million people and some 40 world leaders marched to protest last week's terror attacks. On Wednesday, Islamist militants stormed the office of the satiric publication Charlie Hebdo and murdered journalists, police officers, and hostages before being killed by French police on Friday. The magazine was an equal opportunity offender when it came to religion and politics. A staffer who was wounded last week told French TV in 2012, "In France, we always have the right to write and draw. And if some people are not happy with us, they can sue us and we can defend ourselves. That's democracy. You don't throw bombs. You discuss. You debate. You don't act violently." We have three guests who have joined us during this hour of Radio Times. And here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Signe Wilkinson. She's the Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for the Philadelphia Daily News. Her cartoons appear in the Philadelphia Inquirer 3 days a week. And Signe, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Also with us is Matt Welch, and he's editor-in-chief at Reason Magazine. Matt, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. And Eric Wemple, rounding out our trio of guests. He's media critic for The Washington Post. Eric, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you very much.
Signe, let me begin with you and actually begin with a cartoon that you wrote, or that you drew, last week in response to this attack on Charlie Hebdo. Can you describe it for our listeners?
Well, it's a pretty simple cartoon, and it was a cartoon I had to draw the day of the attack, and already by the time I got to my drawing board, there were many cartoons already drawn from cartoonists around the world. There's been a huge outpouring, a graphic outpouring. Mine is simply which would do Mohammed more harm? And one guy is standing with a submachine gun in black, the black outfit that the attackers wore. And the second is a cartoonist, a male cartoonist, I might say, but just a cartoonist holding a pen in the exact same position as the other guy is holding his machine gun.
What's so interesting, looking at the protests and since these horrific murders last week, how a pen or even a pencil has become really a symbol of free speech, the right to draw.
It is, particularly now when everybody does their cartoons online. And I actually, when I was drawing the pen, I was thinking, some people aren't going to know what this is.
Because it's a pen, right?
Because it's a pen.
But it still is a very powerful symbol and image and message, really.
Correct.
Do you feel like all cartoonists are under attack or under the microscope?
Well, cartoonists are not usually the most popular people because a good cartoonist has a strong point of view. And anyone with a strong point of view, there are people who have opposing strong points of view. So if I do a cartoon on no matter what, there are going to be people who disagree with it. Having said that, though, the cartoonists around the world, including a lot of Arab cartoonists, have done really strong, wonderful cartoons in support of Charlie Hebdo. The funniest one I saw this morning were the three terrorists in front of in heaven in front of Allah, and Allah is wearing a little sign saying "Je suis Charlie." It was sort of
well done.
Yeah,
well done, Eric. Let me get you in on the conversation. As media critic for the Washington Post, the Washington Post on its editorial page did carry one of these cartoons by Charlie Hebdo. Most mainstream, if I can say, news organizations did not. How do you see news organizations wrestling with whether to print or not to print?
Well, there are two rationales that have been offered as to why they would not. One is that they would be offensive to the readers and that they don't trade in deliberately offensive content. The other is that they have people on the front lines in hotspot terrorist covering terrorism overseas, and they don't want to put those people in danger. I think both of those rationales fail under scrutiny. The first one, because I think that when something is newsworthy, I think that you have to, especially in a situation as extreme as this, I think you have to throw your decency standards out the window and basically, trade in this sort of stuff, even if it may offend people. I think the mainstream media has been has coddled its audience far too much throughout its history. And the part about protecting people who are covering wars and in foreign hotspots, that I think is really weak, because I think those people are already in incalculable risk. And I don't think that anything that the Western news organizations can do at this point would put people at any greater risk.
But clearly there are examples in the past, Eric, of cartoons inflaming people and putting people at risk.
Yes. Yeah, sure there are. I mean, there are certainly examples. But that is that's something that cannot be, you know, I just think that this situation is just so clear, though. I think this is just a big failing.
Matt, let me get you in on the conversation. And you had an interesting piece in Reason where you basically said or questioned people that were saying, "Je suis Charlie, I am Charlie," and sort of in solidarity with what happened to these cartoonists, these journalists in Paris. Help us understand the message that you were trying to get out.
It wasn't necessarily an attack on the sentiment, which was, you know, it was beautiful to behold yesterday in France. 4 million people were on the streets in France. That's just a stunning number. And people were doing it out of a sense of shared sympathy and empathy, even aspiration. My point was that we actually are not Charlie. Almost none of us are actually as brave as they were. And I think about, you know, we talk about how in America we don't reprint these cartoons, which I think I agree with Eric very, very strongly that, you know, the justifications for that are almost all really, really terrible and hypocritical. But, you know, so Charlie Hebdo gets firebombed in 2011 by Islamic extremists who are upset about their previous portrayals of Mohammed and treatments of Islam. What do they do after getting firebombed? Imagine your newspaper, your radio station gets firebombed. What do you do 6 days later? They drew a cover of a guy wearing a Charlie Hebdo t-shirt making out with an imam and then saying love will conquer over hate. To do that, I mean, they could have put a guy with a turban, you know, a bomb in a beard of Muhammad, which is an image that we've seen around. They could have done it a lot of different ways, but it's actually kind of a beautiful way under extreme duress to make a very important and brave point without backing down. I see, you know, what is wrong with reprinting that in an American newspaper? That offends no one, or it should offend no one, and you have to be able to tell that story. So what I was saying, you know, no, we're not. If we had all been Charlie, Charlie's going to provoke. It's a French style of cartooning, which is really, you know, scatological. It can be seen as juvenile, but they almost always punch up and not down. They're taking people down a peg. We don't really do that in the same way in America. That's fine. But, you know, the fact that in 2006, when the Danish cartoon controversy really caught hold, and almost unanimously, although I think it was the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is one of the exceptions to this, I might be wrong, but almost unanimously, all newspapers, including the LA Times, where I worked at the time, did not reprint any of the cartoons, even just to show, hey, look, this is just a silly cartoon. Mm-hmm. When we do that, that puts the target on the few and the brave even larger. We did not diffuse the risk. We granted something like a bomber's veto on people and said, yeah, we'll offend other people with kind of equally disturbing images, but we know that the Catholics and the Jews and other people are not going to bomb us. But we're kind of scared, you know, additionally scared by these 1.5 billion Muslims who we are essentially treating as sleeper agents, as people who just go off no matter what. And I think that's actually kind of condescending towards people. So, no, we're not Charlie. I wish we were. It's an aspiration. I wake up wishing that I could be that brave. But we should realize that one of the reasons why I think that they were especially targeted was because they were more brave.
Let me get you back into the conversation. Signe, looks like you want to say something.
Well, just to follow up on the comment about the Philadelphia Inquirer, which did, I think, in the perfect way, published one of the Danish cartoons at the time of the controversy. Interestingly, the Austin Statesman American ran one of the cartoons just a few days before the whole controversy hit, and they got no blowback because people weren't alerted to be offended, whereas by the time other newspapers and magazines were tested, it was clear that it was going to be controversial. And as you said, most didn't. But what happened at the Inquirer is what I think ought to happen, and what these cartoons do. They provoke a strong reaction. The Inquirer did it. They put it in a box. They put an explanatory note on the reason that they were publishing it. As you said, Eric, it was part of the news. Readers should see it. And then the protests began. There were pickets in front of the building. There were, you know, visitations from people who were offended. But that started a conversation here in Philadelphia that clearly needed to be had. And it's been my experience on controversial cartoons that I've done on all sorts of issues that's what happens. But, you know, people who say, well, why don't you do this all the time? It is really not pleasant to be picketed. Really not pleasant. It's not great when someone calls you up, as someone did on a Saturday afternoon from a radio or a TV station, saying, are you a racist? Because somebody had accused one of my cartoons of being racist. And you have to go out and defend yourself about, being a hideous and horrible human being. It's not great.
Well, Eric, let me go back to you. And I mean, picking up on what Signe just said, I mean, satire is often misunderstood. And even looking at some of these Charlie Hebdo images, I mean, depending on where they're coming from, you know, if they were some white supremacist group that were doing them, one would wonder if they weren't racist or not.
That's totally true. And I believe now there's some French people in France who are sticking up. There's been a lot of backlash and counter backlash over this very point, which is interpretation of these particular cartoons. And so in a way, there's a dialogue that's sparked by this tragedy that never would have happened before, which is, I suppose, perhaps one of the only good things to have come out of this. But there are now people in France writing stuff about, no, these were never racist, these were never offensive, here's why, so on and so forth. And as I say, we weren't even close to having that conversation this time last week. But yes, you know, depending upon your perspective, depending upon what the news is prompting, you can have millions of different interpretations of these things.
If I could just jump in on that.
Well, you know what, Matt, only just because we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation, then I'll let you jump in after that break. And we are talking about the attack on Charlie Hebdo that led to a number of deaths in Paris last week, its implication for free speech, for journalism, for society, the right to offend. Talking with Eric Wemple, media critic for The Washington Post, Matt Welch, editor-in-chief at Reason Magazine, Signe Wilkinson, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for the Philadelphia, for the Philadelphia Daily News, and her cartoons do appear in the Philadelphia Inquirer 3 days a week. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and we'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking with Signe Wilkinson, Matt Welch, and Eric Wemple about the murders last week at the headquarters of the satirical journal Charlie Hebdo in Paris. Shocked much of the world, reignited the debate over mockery and free speech and journalism. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY. Radio Times, what do you make of what happened in Paris last week? And, of course, the reaction to it and questions about satire and mockery, the right to offend, and journalism. Matt Welch, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been really genuinely dismayed by a minority strain of opinion out there since this attack, in which people who became familiar with Charlie Hebdo, you know, that morning started rifling through their archive, looking to strip pieces of art completely out of a context that they do not understand in order to affix the label racism on them. I saw Joyce Carol Oates tweet out, like, yeah, it's hard to know where satire ends and hate crimes begin. I've seen a lot of people, you know, make comparisons to David Duke and all this kind of stuff. My wife is French, and is a French journalist. I have some familiarity with this publication. Among most French people, it is seen as one of the, or was seen, I should say, as one of the most effective tools against racism in that country. They were their politics ranged from basically left to far left. They saw as their number one target Marine Le Pen's National Front Party. There's one cartoon that was passed around as great evidence of their racism, and it was of a black, I believe, minister, I forget in which category, looking like a monkey. Oh my God, they're portraying a black minister like a monkey. This is obviously racist. They're punching down or something like that. No, actually, that minister had just been portrayed as a monkey in another publication, and if you could look on the side of there, there was an FN logo, which is for the National Front. So they satirized the racism of other people, and to have people just like casually toss off these accusations of racism on people who've just been killed, words can't describe how frustrating that is. There really should be, I mean, it doesn't mean you have to like praise the dead or anything like that, but let's not throw totally false accusations at people in exactly that moment. It strikes me as bizarre and unsound.
Well, Eric, let me pick up on that. And one of the articles that I read in preparation for the show, which is a writer actually from Australia, saying, keep in mind this is a French publication. And not all things translate into other countries. And they have a sort of unique use of satire and lampooning people. And yes, we have our First Amendment in this country, but it's not necessarily one and the same. And some things I do think get lost in translation.
A massive amount. Matt is 100% correct. You can't just, as he said, rifle through the archive. It doesn't work. In each case, they're talking about a different set of news circumstances. And you know, there's just so much stuff they're bouncing off of, that if you're not in sort of in the moment and you don't do your research and don't understand the week's news, there's no way you can understand any of it. And so that is incredibly frustrating, and it's awful. And you know, and now this debate going back and forth, you know, I think it's pretty clear that this particular strain of argument never should have been raised in the first place. But anyhow, the other thing is that you know, I think the thing that the news organizations are struggling with is the rendering the Prophet Muhammad in any way, you know, a taboo subject. And, you know, there's been a great debate over, you know, do news organizations or should we have the right to be blasphemous? And I think that's another dimension of this that's worth taking a look at.
Yes, well, Sydney, go ahead.
Eric, I think my experience is most American newspapers don't just set out for the hell of it to be attacking Muhammad or anybody else. However, I think what happens is when a religious organization or people who are acting in the name of a sacred prophet start doing crazy stuff like this, you have to go after it. And that's my bottom line argument on this. You know, if you don't want your prophet ending up in stupid cartoons, don't do stupid things in the name of your prophet. Period.
Eric, let me go back to you because you are media critic for The Washington Post. This may be unfair because this is something that The New York Times said about why they wouldn't publish any of these cartoons under time standards. We do not normally publish images or other material deliberately intended to offend religious sensibilities. After careful consideration, Times editors decided that describing the cartoons in question would give readers sufficient information to understand today's stories. And so they thought, well, describe. Go ahead. They were saying if we describe the cartoons, we don't need to print them.
I think that's an insult to cartoonists.
Thank you.
And artists everywhere, all over the world. I think that's one of the most stupid, awful, writer-centric, expressions of journalistic arrogance that I've heard in a real long time.
Eric, you know, what do you think on that, though?
Tell us what you really think.
Immediately go and lay off everybody you've ever asked to illustrate a feature story or anything like that. Anybody you've ever asked to do a photo illustration, why don't you just Why don't you just cut ties with them if you think you can describe the art just as well?
Well, as a matter of fact, Eric, newspapers mostly have. When I got started many years ago, there were 150 cartoonists at newspapers in this country. Now there are about 50.
Wow.
Right, but that's not because they feel that somehow it's not worthy. It's just they say they don't have the budget.
Well, that's true, but we're low on the totem pole. And I think
I understand that.
And I think that this, what this does say, though, is that cartoons have a special punch that just describing the same image would not. Let's see. What is that expression about a thousand being worth a thousand words?
And let's also remember what the New York Times is saying there, because we don't deliberately, you know, offend readers. It took people on the internet, 35 seconds to find ample counterexamples of them showing, for example, examples of explicitly anti-Semitic art in an article that was sort of about the use of anti-Semitic images. They illustrated them with anti-Semitic images because you want to see them to know what you're talking about. No problem. It's still up there on the Times website. Same thing with Andre Serrano's Piss Christ, you know, which is never goes away as something that people want to talk about. They show that on their website. They don't think twice about it. But Dean Baquet, the editor-in-chief of the New York Times, who was the editor of the LA Times when I was there arguing for us to print the Danish cartoons, and he also blocked that, he said, well, we don't want to offend our reader in Brooklyn. Well, that's not true. It is, we are scared of our reader in Brooklyn, and the fact that he could not admit that, and in fact went on the Facebook page of an L.A.-based columnist, Mark Cooper, to call him a juvenile, non-public radio-friendly cuss word because he criticized him, shows the kind of just defensiveness and lack of, lack of ability to just treat honestly this situation. Penn Jillette, the great magician and free speech advocate, will tell you there are two subjects that he won't touch. One is sort of Islam or Islamic fundamentalism, and the other is the Church of Scientology. And he will admit it. And he says, I don't do that because I'm scared. I'm scared of they're going to either sue me to death or kill me to death. And he can't think of a single insult more profound than that. He is scared to lampoon somebody because they might hurt him back. At least he's being honest. I wish other newspapers would be as honest.
Eric, let me go back to you. Let me just jump in here only because, and I appreciate all the what the three of you were saying. But what I find so interesting, Eric, is that apparently Charlie Hebdo is going to print this week, and they're going to publish something like a million copies of their magazine. And my understanding is, you know, a week or two ago, maybe they had 30,000 or 70,000 copies that they would publish.
They were up around 60. They're going to try to go ahead.
I think it's kind of analogous to The Interview, which would have gotten zero, or not zero, but low, close to zero. recognition had it not been for the great dictator of North Korea. And that's essentially what's happening to Charlie Hebdo, thanks to these Islamic fundamentalists.
You want to weigh in on that, Eric? Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think that there is a similar dynamic. Unfortunately, with The Interview, we could sort of laugh about it all. With Charlie Hebdo, this is just awful. They've torn the heart out of that magazine in terms of its talent. But I do believe that probably has better prospects going forward. I just wanted to make one more comment about the New York Times, however. This notion that they can gauge what's deliberately offensive is also offensive to artists and cartoonists because they are putting themselves in the mind and in the intent of the cartoonist when, in fact, cartoonists have very, very complex and oftentimes unreadable intentions in making these cartoons. The notion that some mainstream media outlet is sitting over here saying, "Oh, we don't traffic in deliberately offensive stuff." Well, what if the cartoonist wasn't being deliberately offensive? What if they weren't being offensive at all? What if they were being accidentally offensive? That raises another. Go ahead.
Matt, I would say that's what
Eric,
happened.
But yeah, no, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry,
that's
Eric.
Okay.
I would say that's what happened during the Danish cartoonist controversy. The cartoonists themselves did not set out to start riots around the world. A few people who decided to be offended went up and ginned up that controversy. And again, what I'll say about getting discussions started, one of those imams eventually recanted when he saw what happened after after all the destruction in the wake, and has now, you know, he's in touch with Fleming Rose, who was the publisher of those cartoons, and who just published a terrific book, The Tyranny of Silence, about this very issue.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the three of you, and we got a bunch of people that want to join our conversation. That's Sidney Wilkinson, a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist. Joining us by telephone, Matt Welch. He's editor-in-chief at Reason Magazine. And Eric Wemple is media critic for The Washington Post. Let me get, looks like, Amy to join us. Amy from Mount Airy. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted the commenters to talk a little more explicitly about race issues. I would note that for many of us in the public, my assumption was that the concerns had to do with insulting Islam. However, when I saw the cartoon of portraying the girls kidnapped by Boko Haram as pregnant welfare queens, it really spoke to me about the need to publish the cartoons, but I don't hear anybody, and maybe I missed it, addressing the issue that it's possible that some of the cartoons are racist, and that's not an argument against publishing them. So I would love to hear thoughts about that.
Amy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Matt, that's one of the cartoons that's gotten a fair amount of response.
That happened in the same week or in the same news time period as people from the National Front talking about how pregnant immigrants were coming in to France because they wanted to collect all the welfare. And so they wanted to illustrate the absurdity of this argument because Charlie Hebdo was pro-immigration and they wanted everyone to be naturalized and they hated racism. So they went to the second degree and amped up the ridiculousness of that charge by printing an image that, to someone who is seeing this stripped out of context, go, oh, my God, that's racist. Well, yes, oh, my God, that's racist. That's actually the point that they were trying to make. So it's being portrayed here as example of their own racism. And I guess if that's the priority that you have to talk about in the wake of 12 people getting killed, all right. But please know that there are contexts in which these things are shown, and those contexts are oftentimes a lot different than our expectations of what went into the drawing of the cartoon.
I'm reading a Facebook comment from Jamie. Jamie says, I'm still Charlie because I'm not represented by American media or institutions, nor am I responsible. Whoops, on popular opinion from 2006 to 2011. I am who I am, and it's not a journalist's job to tell me who I am. Obviously, one of the many people, probably millions of people across the world that said, I am Charlie, and identifying with how I think many people feel so offended that people that were drawing cartoons could somehow be targeted for their work. We have an email from Carol. The idea that our papers today censored our cartoons by not printing the Charlie Hebdo cartoons pales because the fact that cartoonists are already being phased out by our huge newspaper empires. And that's something, Sidney, that you were saying, which is that there are about 50 of you left, right?
I wish there were a huge newspaper empires left. As one of my other guests said, a lot of it is economics.
A lot of it, yes, just
but
in terms of
still.
But still.
I appreciate her point.
But where do you think, I mean, Eric and Matt mentioned this and other people have as well, saying to mainstream media, if I can use that, you know, if everyone had in solidarity published all these cartoons, what kind of message would that have sent? Why do you think that didn't happen?
Why do I think that that the mainstream media did not publish these?
Yeah, it's sort of in concert.
Well, you know, I think that's a really good question, and I'd really like to hear Matt on this. But my own theory on this is that if a big mover had gone on Wednesday morning, in other words, if like CNN or one of the networks had made a bold decision that morning to go ahead and to republish these cartoons, I think that other media entities would have followed. I think that there was some sort of like everybody looking around at each other, trying to figure out what each other one was going to do, which in itself is a cowardly act. Mm. But I think if someone had had the courage to go forward and to do this, then I think that there we would have had a sort of a concatenation on that front. We didn't. And that's really unfortunate because there is strength in numbers. And there are only a few outlets. It should be noted, however, the Daily Beast and you know, Huffington Post and all kinds of other sort of like newer media outlets have gone ahead and done so.
Yeah, I mean, I should basically every publication in my field of opinion magazines, Weekly Standard, National Review, I believe Mother Jones, I might be wrong, Slate, they all did kind of without hesitation. My line of differentiation in trying to figure this out is, are you large enough to have a legal affairs department? If so, you didn't run the cartoons. If you're a smaller player, a newer upstart that hasn't figured out that you need a bunch of lawyers in the modern media universe, you probably didn't publish them. So I you know, I'm heartened actually by the comparative number of people who did publish them, including us. I don't think necessarily that that would lead to any kind of cascading effect. I think that the attitudes that are prevailing among the kind of legacy media outlets, and NPR is included in that. NPR decided not to to publish the cartoons. Fox News, which I also work for, the Fox Business Network, decided not to do it. I think that the baked-in attitudes of gatekeeping there, which is not shared as much by either new media or alternative media or political media, that is as much to explain for any of this. There's this sort of this condescending feeling of like, you know, all the news that's fit.
Can I ask you?
I hate to do this only because we have to take another short break.
Okay.
So hold on, Signe, to your thought there. And again, talking about the Charlie Hebdo cartoons, the attack, murders at Charlie Hebdo, some 17 people killed in France last week, including journalists, police officers, also hostages as well, and the attackers were killed as well. And we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. We will be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. Let me quote something from Voltaire. He said, many centuries ago, I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. And we are talking about the murders last week in Paris at the headquarters of the satirical journal Charlie Hebdo, what it means about free speech, about the right to offend, about the press. And again, talking with Signe Wilkinson, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist at the Philadelphia Daily News, Matt Welch is editor-in-chief at Reason Magazine. Eric Wemple is media critic for The Washington Post. And what do you think about publishing the Charlie Hebdo cartoons? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Signe, you had a question actually for Eric.
Right. What was the reaction to your publishing those cartoons at the Post?
It wasn't overwhelming. I mean, I think that we got a lot of decent feedback on email and in the comments, but it was just one. Remember, I mean, I think it was a strong statement only because, or it was a statement only because of the cowardice of the rest of the mainstream media. I mean, else people weren't coming to us to see that image because it was so widely shared elsewhere. So it wasn't an overwhelming reaction. I think that, you know, I don't think that there was a wide degree of self-congratulation or, you know, chest beating within the offices either, because I think we all recognize that it shouldn't have been newsworthy, if you understand what I mean.
Well,
you understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I do, but I think that this is, it sort of made the earlier point, if everyone had done it, then they would have found out that publishing something like this is a good thing, and it freeze everybody. I was actually shocked about the New York Times Week in Review section this weekend, barely mentioned the whole issue. I was like, did it really not happen?
Yeah, they must have had a long publishing lag this week.
To you, Signe, though, but do you feel like editorial cartoonists like yourself in this country are sort of doing the dirty work that legacy media doesn't want to do?
Well, I do not consider myself a dirty worker. But,
no, I didn't mean
yes,
that.
Yes, I know. I think that opinion is really important in newspapers. And to have visual opinion, it sort of clarifies things into a single point that people can react to one way or the other. And as I've said before, and the other two guests have said, that's really important. I mean, you want people talking about these things. You want to air these issues. We keep saying we want to have a conversation on race in the United States, and then we set up all these things that you're not allowed to say before you walk into the room to have the conversation. And cartoonists do step over the line occasionally. But as my friend Gary Thompson, the great movie critic at the Daily News, says, well, if you're on a baseball team and you don't occasionally get thrown out at second base, you're not doing your job. So
fair enough. Fair enough. Let me get Jamie from Baltimore, Maryland, to join us. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I kind of come down on the side of the New York Times, and I would say that because I think that, like everything else, you have to weigh risk and reward, you know, and is it truly worth it to you to go ahead and do it or not, you know, while at the same time I do have a great respect for, you know, freedom of speech and, you know, and those kinds of things, you know. So I think, especially when it can come down to the loss of life, you know, just because someone is offended by it, you know. And then also I think that, sometimes there's blurred lines between what is sarcasm or, and the underlying message in anything, you know, because most times everything has an agenda, you know, somebody's trying to get some type of point across. And sometimes that can be blurred, especially
sure.
when it comes to satire. You know, and I just had one other point to make.
Well, you know what, Jamie, let me just take your point only because we have so many people that want to join the conversation. And you raise an interesting one, which I actually want to put to you, Matt Welch, based on what he was just saying. But do you think newspapers, cartoonists, that there is the right to offend?
Of course.
Thank you.
Just checking.
I don't really understand the point of having free speech unless people are being offended. And offending people, especially in power, is one of the time-honored kind of things that we do in the Enlightenment in France and in the United States, like chiefly among other people. I do agree with the caller, and I want to make this clear that it is a and I might disagree with Eric on this. I think it is a understandable justification for not publishing those cartoons to say, I am afraid for my staff members. I think that's a justifiable thing. All I'm asking for is, if that is the case, please just admit it. Don't dress this up in journalism values, because it ain't. It's fear. That's what it is.
Go ahead, Eric.
But here's the point. I think you're right about that. But what I was saying really was when I thought it was an ill-justified rationale, in that I don't think that anybody is more endangered for having printed or aired a single Charlie Hebdo cartoon when you consider that people are getting beheaded by ISIS for being an aid worker, for being a freelance journalist. For Christ's sake, if you're with CNN and ISIS captures you, you're at great, great risk.
Whether or not they publish the cartoons.
I was taking issue with how serious and how well argued or how well articulated and reasoned that particular excuse was. I wasn't. If they actually could prove that publishing the Charlie Hebdo cartoons would have put their people at much greater risk, then I think that's justifiable too, as long as they cop to it.
Let me get Zach from West Philadelphia to join us on Radio Time. Zach, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening to this for a while, and I guess I've been trying my best to follow the story. And I guess I've just been continually wondering, like, what the end goal of some of the cartoons that are portraying Muhammad or the Muslim world were. Like, if like we want to expose hypocrisy, and like, you know, I guess like make the world a better place for everybody to speak their minds and all of this. Like, what kind of dialogue, I guess, is supposed to be created out of the cartoons of like naked images of Muhammad and stuff like that? Like, what's the conversation supposed to be? What's the goal? I just never really got it. I guess it's why sometimes I get tripped up feeling like it's just about antagonism, because I just can't really envision a conversation that's supposed to come out of it.
No, I think it's a great question, actually. And Signe, can I take that first to you? I mean, and what he's saying is if you look at perhaps all these cartoons that we've been talking about, if the goal is to debate and discuss, is that happening? I mean, did Charlie Hebdo help to create a greater understanding of?
Well, I'll let Matt talk to that, because he clearly has a better understanding of the context in which they were published. But again, back to the Danish cartoons, which in some ways started all this in 2005, and then the controversy in 2006. The Fleming Rose, the publisher, was inspired to even ask for the cartoons because of all the censorship that was going on in journalism and in theater and in art galleries, where things were taken down because somebody found them offensive. Hmm. There was a growing feeling that people were trimming their sails ideologically. Expression-wise, people who disagreed with or who found them not offensive and found them legitimate pieces of art were being deprived of the right to even look at them. So it was a blow for being able to express doubt about the assertions of the people defending the Prophet Muhammad, and that's where those came from, and I think it was a perfectly legitimate way of dealing with it.
Matt, do you want to
just jump in?
Yeah, please.
One of the cartoons covers that Charlie Hebdo did, actually in the wake of the Danish cartoons thing, that ended up getting them hauled in front of court in France, because France doesn't have the same kind of robust free speech protections that we do. It was of the Prophet Muhammad, but his face was kind of invisible because his head was buried in his hands. And the cover line was basically, "I can't believe what these morons are doing in my name." So I think that is a pretty understandable sentiment. What were they trying to do? They were trying to say that fanatics, that extremists, are using this religion in a way that actually defaces the religion. So I think that was actually respectful of Muhammad.
And
who, by the way, was a historically existing character. So, I mean, if we're saying that we can't, I mean, New York Times the other day did not print a photo of a statue of Muhammad on a story about a statue of Muhammad. If we're saying that we can't do historiography anymore on someone we know who lived, that's super troubling.
The United States, we in the United States, we cartoonists have super protection thanks to the great pornographer Larry Flint, who argued, who took a case that Jerry Falwell brought against him for what is truly a distasteful cartoon in Hustler magazine. But the Supreme Court, under Rehnquist, known liberal debauched human being, said it's a cartoon, it's humor, get over it. And if we're going to, as somebody said earlier, if we're going to treat all religions equally and we expect Catholics to take a joke, certainly we know Jews joke about everything, and we hope that Muslims someday will feel that same freedom here in the West.
Let me get to Becca from West Philadelphia to join our conversation. Becca, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have Becca?
It reminds me a little bit of a problem that I have with, like, The Daily Show in America, which is that, like, I see The Daily Show make fun of like Christian fundamentalism and kind of pick on, you know, people who vote against their own interests and voting Republican and calling people like racist. And it seems to me that there are issues of like class and education that aren't really being explored there, where kind of like white, very educated, savvy, smart people picking on people who might be disenfranchised, might not be that educated or that intelligent or that able to articulate, you know, their issues.
Well,
so
Becca,
it seems to me like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, look, let me just, I mean, I don't want to do a whole hour on that, but at the same time, it seems that the Daily Show goes after the media. It goes after politicians. It really does go after people in high places. I don't see it as a program that goes after minorities or people who are on the fringes of society. And it is a show that isn't an entirely white show anymore. But let me get Eric Wemple to jump in on that.
Yeah, is the argument here that that the Daily Show just takes after the masses and that doesn't go after the corridors of power?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I think you've adequately refuted that.
Okay, all right.
I think all you have to do is watch a few episodes. They go after, you know, the most powerful institutions in all of media. They go after the White House. They go after they go after Congress. God, did they go after Congress. So anyhow, yeah.
And so well. Let me see. I don't know if this is a weird segue, Matt Welch, but I wonder, and I was thinking about universities that have things like speech codes, and I'm not taking David Brooks' argument here, but I just was thinking about how hard it is for all of us to tolerate opinions that we don't agree with, and, you know, whether we censor them or whether we don't want to hear them. But I'd just be curious about what you think about that.
I feel like, I mean, there's two separate things between the legalities of free speech and First Amendment stuff and then the culture of free speech. And a lot of, especially libertarians, my own readers, always yell at me about one thing or the other. The culture of free speech is critical, or else the legality of the free speech will eventually wash away. And our culture here, and, you know, non-reprinting of these cartoons is an indictment of that culture. That culture, in my estimation, has been backsliding over the last decade, you know, you could say basically over the last 2.5 decades, starting with the Salman Rushdie thing and then getting into the sort of speech codes, campus political correctness things of the 90s, which we thought kind of went away but never really did. It's actually sort of growing, and it's really important. And one of the biggest line items or justifications for kind of making calls to limit speech or to just overreact to speech have to do with people's sense of being triggered or microaggressed or somehow offended. And we've seen this all over college campuses in the last 12 to 24 months in kind of horrific and ridiculous ways. We have to robustly say no to that, I believe, as those of us who want to expand the use of permissible discourse, particularly those who are on the kind of receiving end of, you know, who feel like they are the aggrieved party. You need to be able to create a zone in which you can freely argue why your tormentors, your oppressors, the people in power are wrong. And eventually, if that space is free and clean, you'll win your argument. Think about, like, gay marriage for those of us who think that gays should be allowed to marry. You were on the wrong side of majority public opinion for a long time on that issue. And if somehow your views 35 years ago were seen as too beyond the pale legally and culturally, he wouldn't have been able to make the argument. But they made the argument. I think they've won the argument, and we'll see in the future as partly as a result of that. I highly recommend a book by Jonathan Rauch called Kindly Inquisitors, which came out in 93, and he wrote a recent update of it that talks a lot about these issues in particular. It's just, it's probably the best sort of explication of free speech that I've seen in America in the last 25 years.
Well, I would love to go on and carry on this conversation, but they're playing my song, Means We Have to Say Goodbye. Matt Welch, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. Editor-in-Chief at Reason Magazine. Eric Wemple, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Media critic for The Washington Post, and Signe Wilkinson, thank you very much for joining us here in our Philadelphia studio.
Thank you. I only wish Tony Auth were here.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. My heart breaks when you say that. Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist Signe Wilkinson, and she writes for the Philadelphia Daily News, and her cartoons appear in the Philadelphia Inquirer 3 days a week. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to carry on this conversation on our Facebook page and on Twitter as well. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.